work 9 to 5 and starts in the PM. And I love the sunrise, so I step out in the AM. The street is black and shiny from the nightly raining. The glory of the light brings evaporation. Mornings fresh, oxygen cleanest. So I take a deep hit, help my mind stay the greenest. I'm already awake, so I'm not.
Good evening. You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, your community radio station. This is Michael Anderson, and you're tuned in to the Hole in the Bucket radio show. Hole in the Bucket is KBOO's show on housing, homelessness, and poverty issues, where we bring out the voices of people who are experiencing some of the complications, problems, and struggles that come when you do not have a stable place to call home. We'll be joined later tonight by my co-host, Jay Thiemeyer. He'll be calling in. He's recovering from hip surgery, and we all are sending our best wishes out to him. And we'll be talking tonight primarily about Project Homeless Connect. That was the focus of our show last week. It was an effort put together by the City of Portland, Multnomah County, and a lot of the social service agencies in the area to bring together the community around homelessness and some of the issues and needs that people who are experiencing homelessness go through. But before we get into the body of our show, I would like to run through what we like to call homeless headlines. These are national or local stories that bring in news issues that have an impact on the realities of people who are homeless or people living in poverty on the edge of homelessness. Republican lawmakers cut services to families, seniors, and people with disabilities, all while making permanent tax cuts for the very wealthy. House Republicans eked out a victory on a $39.5 billion budget-cutting package last Wednesday, slashing essential programs such as Medicare, Medicaid, student loan programs, as well as the elimination of HUD's upfront grant program, which has been so vital in preserving affordable housing nationwide. The spending bill, which covers a 5-year period ending in 2010, will cut $6.4 billion in Medicare, the health care program for the elderly. In the Medicaid health care program for the poor and people with disabilities, there'll be a $4.8 billion cut. Representative Louise Slaughter, a Democrat of New York, said, "A vote for this budget literally takes away health care from our children so we can give more money to the super rich." In addition to the very troubling budget cuts, Advocate for Families are also accusing the administration and Republican lawmakers of playing bait and switch with family values. Despite the inclusion of, quote, marriage promotion funding, the recently passed federal budget penalizes states that provide temporary assistance for needy families, also known as TANF, to poor married families. The provisions that relate to the TANF block grant include significant changes in work requirements in states that families must meet. The new regulations now require states to enroll 90% of two-parent families that they assist in work programs for at least 35 hours a week. States that do not meet the bill's work participation requirements would be subject to financial penalties. Both researchers and state officials have long recognized that such a requirement would be virtually impossible for even the best-run, highest-performing state programs to meet. In other news, reports from Iowa and New York City reveal the same trend. Homelessness is on the rise. Homelessness in Iowa has drastically risen in the past 6 years among poor women with children, according to a recent report. The report, commissioned by the Iowa Council on Homelessness, shows that about 21,000 Iowans are without homes in 2005, 61% of those being single women with children. This group makes up more than 3 out of 5 of all the homeless households that are reported. In New York, more and more New Yorkers are calling streets their home. The Coalition for the Homeless 7th Annual State of Homelessness Report calls this the worst decade for homelessness since the Great Depression. The group found that over the first half of this decade, an average of more than 32,000 New Yorkers slept in homeless shelters each night, a 44% increase from the 1990s and dramatically higher than the 1980s. An advocate for the homeless says the biggest problem is the cost of housing. Quote, "For low-income people, even for working people, it's harder and harder to afford a home. But at the same time, we've seen dramatic cutbacks in government housing assistance from federal, state, and city government." Finally, in a positive news, on February 15th, next Wednesday on KBOO, we will air the Homeless Marathon. The Homeless Marathon, which in some ways was the parent effort that gave birth to Hole in the Bucket here at KBOO, this is the 9th annual marathon, and it's set to run from Atlanta, starting at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. KBOO will air the 14-hour live broadcast focusing on homelessness and poverty in America in its entirety. The marathon presents voices of experts, takes calls from around the country, and above all, puts homeless people on the air directly so America can hear who they really are and learn more about the obstacles they face. The marathon will be hosted in Atlanta by the 100,000-watt community radio station WRFG. Additional information, including broadcast schedule and sound clips from past marathons, are available online at www.homelessnessmarathon.org. That's one word, homelessness marathon. So that's the homeless news. Now we're going to go to my co-host, who again joins us by phone, Jay Thiemeyer, who's going to open up this evening's discussion about Project Homeless Connect with some first-person reflections on the event and what it means for Portland's community of people who are homeless. Jay?
Yes, thank you, Mike. I really want to elaborate on a quote in the latest Street Roots, an article on Homeless Connect by Joanne Zuhl. There's a quote of Mary Lee, who is the coordinator for the County for School and Community Partnerships, and she'll be the facilitator for the next Homeless Connect, which will be focusing on families. She said, quote, "I think the larger lesson for the community is this, is that this is the kind of need we have. For as little as this was, and it wasn't nothing, but for as little as this was, people were willing to stand in this freezing rain for 4 hours to try to get it. If it says anything to this community, it says what the need is and what people are willing to do to try to help themselves." I think that the real significance of Homeless Connect, besides a obviously a really heroic outpouring of community effort and concern for the homeless, in other words, an exhibition that the community wants to do something for the homeless, is that the need is becoming more and more urgent for the homeless, the near homeless, and the working poor. And I'm thinking there was mention of the impact of the budget that was passed by the House of Representatives a week ago, which involved nearly $40 billion in cuts to really effective programs for the low-income folks, Medicare, Medicaid, TANF, food stamps, SSI, and that this was followed 3 days later by an extension of $60 billion in tax cuts to the super rich. And what that tax cut means, I mean, that isn't distributed equitably by any means. It veers upward exponentially the more well-to-do folks are. I've got an article here from a few months ago, really, by David K. Johnston, the New York Times reporter who spoke at Reed College Monday night about this. And he said then in this article, "After falling for 2 years, the share of income going to the richest slice of Americans, the top tenth of 1%, grew significantly in 2003, while the share going to 99% of Americans fell. At the same time, the effective income tax rates paid by the top tenth of 1% fell sharply, declining at more than 10 times the rate reduction for middle-class taxpayers. These the beneficiaries of the tax cut that has been supported by the Republican Congress and by the Bush administration is not helping the needy at all. It represents part of what amounts to an assault on the poor to fund, as Bush's most recent budget proposal for 2007 indicates, cuts to programs helping the poor and the vulnerable, an expansion of funding for Homeland Security, the security state, and the defense industry. And the reality is that we have to use an event like Homeless Connect to use that energy, that willingness to address the problems, to channel that into advocacy and working towards real substantial change to benefit the uninsured, the people needing housing, and whatever basic human needs are not going to be addressed by the Congress, the Bush administration, and the right-wing controlled state legislature. Another thing that concerns me very much is the infusion of money from organizations outside Oregon. I've got a an email recently sent out by Blue Oregon, spelled out one word, blueoregon.org. It's a guest column by Patty Wentz. It points to people like Grover Norquist with Americans for Tax Reform, coordinating an infusion of like $40,000 for ballot measures, which are part of the conservative Star of the Beast agenda. Another group is Dick Armey's Freedom Works. These are outside influences trying to take power away from Oregonians and to basically serving the interests of the corporations, the big ranchers, the big timber industry people, the extraction industries, and the people lost sight of are the most vulnerable and the most needy. So I guess my take on a Homeless Connect is that it indicated that the community cares and that it's a matter of where we can plug that energy in most effectively to effect real change in behalf of the most vulnerable. To get, for example, a lot of there was a wonderful effort by the medical and dental group headed up by Kim Tierney who directs the West Side Clinic, which is the one I go to. That's the front line of health care for homeless folks and low-income folks. The county health department is dealing with massive critical cuts, yet she was able to get a response from health providers to really do something effective on them, but it was a one-day deal. They had, for example, diabetes screening. They had dental appointments available, a variety of things. But these are things that would have been available if OHP standard were still fully funded and if the enrollment were still at its peak. That was effective coverage of uninsured people, homeless, near homeless, and working poor. So I've sort of outlined the context. I would like to stress that when people call in, to please talk about what they would like to see improved and what they thought worked with Homeless Connect and how they would like to see people, what they think as workable, usable websites for information and advocacy groups that could work for real change. I have a number of both of those that I'd like to share over the half hour, but one in particular, Affordable Housing Now, and particularly its Speakers Bureau, which is coordinated by Mike. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you.
Well, thank you, Jay, for the kind words about the Speakers Bureau, but I think you're right. I think that you're really capturing sort of what the next steps are, and I think a lot of the great volunteerism and efforts by our local government officials to make the day what it was really have begged the question for next steps. And certainly there's, in terms of doing Project Homelessness Connect again, I think everybody involved has their eye on making some improvements. But I think you really hit the nail on the head on the bigger question about what the next steps are in terms of not just finding a way to put on a better Band-Aid, right. But actually finding a way to deal with the root causes of poverty and housing and homelessness.
I guess I don't want to see the event lost as a feel-good moment that was a voluntaristic celebration. It should be something that really editorialized the urgency of the need that really has to be addressed.
Well, Jay, that was a good summary that's going to kick off our discussion. We're going to take a quick musical break here, and then we're going to come back. I'm going to be joined in the studio by Dan Knuth. We're going to have Jay on the line with us, and then we're going to open up the line to callers. The number here at KBOO is 503-231-8187. And what we're hoping to hear from tonight is people who were involved with Project Homeless Connect. If you went there to seeking services, if you went there to find out more about the issue, if you went there to volunteer and help out and provide, we welcome your calls. We want to hear, what did you think? What went well? What could go better? And what do we need to do as a community to get to the underlying causes of poverty and homelessness that so plague our community and the healthy vision of what we want it to be? So we'll be right back. Once again, 503-231-8187 is the number, and we're looking forward to your calls. Welcome back to Hole in the Bucket. That was Neil Young performing Safeway Cart. So we still have my co-host on the air, Jay Thiemeyer. This is Michael Anderson, and we're going to welcome to the studio homeless advocate Dan Knuth. Hello, Dan.
Good evening, Mike.
How you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Now, you were also at Project Homeless Connect. Do you want to share some of your observations about the day?
Yeah, I was volunteering to a table event for Crossroads, which is a project that sits to the Road Cafe. And one thing I noticed was the incredible amount of volunteer energy put into the event. And that's a special thing in Portland, that people really participate within the community to help out when they see there's a need. Maybe one of the weaknesses was the people outside that were supposed to be there to be helped waited outside in the rain while city officials kind of hyped up the event and got the volunteers motivated. And it was a great presentation as far as raising awareness of the homeless issue. It was a great forum for politicians to promote themselves and their projects. But a weakness was, and it's a weakness in the system throughout, is like the last lack of services. Sarah Culp, who's point person for homelessness in Tom Potter's office, did a lot of effort to lobby the state, and DMV in particular, to provide 30 state ID cards, our driver's licenses, for individuals. Those ran out very fast. And if you don't have ID, which is really hard to get on the street, to get the money for it, when you lose all your possessions, it's losing one backpack. When you lose all your possessions, you don't have ID, you got to start from scratch. You got to send away to another state maybe for a birth certificate. You got to go through this huge, incredible process. And you have to have that ID to look for a job. You have to have that ID to apply for any kind of services, to get on any kind of waiting list. So when those ran out, that meant a lot of people stood out in the rain for 3 or 4 hours and really couldn't get any services. If they couldn't get that one, nothing else was available for them.
You mean during the day that if you didn't have ID, some of the other services that were available were not offered to you? Is that
right? There's certain ones that were. They had some dentist. Well, there was a backlog that would pull teeth. And that is a huge deal when you're on the streets. I can remember sitting out in the cold in my tent, having an abscessed tooth and wishing I could get it pulled. That having that service there was a big deal. That was still available, but there was a big backlog to it. The kind of things that weren't available was getting on a list for housing, applying for food stamps. You can't get into shelter, an emergency shelter anymore without ID because they require a TB card. They want to know your social security number. There's a lot of checks in place. They want to know who you are.
So in other words, it sounds like some of the larger systemic problems that people who are homeless experience across the board when they're trying to get services, trying to get assistance and help, were encapsulated right in this event here. In other words, even though this event was meant to sort of break down the barriers, still, if you didn't have that ID, you might as well not be there.
Right. If you didn't have the ID, you could still get like a meal. You could still maybe meet people, but you couldn't access any of the services you need. And it's a huge problem. There's also a shortage of housing. Nobody there was able to get on lists to wait for housing. But with all the cuts that are coming down, the housing really isn't available until years down the road for most people.
I want to stick with that subject in a second, but I also want to repeat our number again, 503-231-8187. We're hoping for callers out there. If you have some points of view you want to share in Project Homeless Connect, call in, get on the air, and get your voice heard. Jay, you and I had spoke before the show about the wonderful spirit of volunteerism and a lot of the good services that were available, but also what that it was a disappointment that there wasn't access to long-term shelter, housing, home. Do you want to expand on that a little bit?
Well, simply that historically, volunteerism only takes you so far. I mean, it's a wonderful celebratory kind of afternoon, and it's a great time for the community to come together, but it's only a beginning. I guess what I'm concerned about is how do you channel that energy for the long term? that's why I was thinking that, you know, hopefully listeners will call in. I've got some ideas about advocacy groups and websites for information to sort of find out what is, you know, really building to mount pressure for real change. Because as things are now, the right wing is just, you know, I mean, it's almost laughable that you have this feel-good moment and then that's the end of it. So I guess it's just the limitations of volunteerism. As wonderful it is for an afternoon, that's what concerns me.
And the original project, Homeless Connect in San Francisco, one of the reasons it was so successful and repeated as an event is because there was housing available. Isn't that correct?
Right. I believe they had shelter beds, which is a total contrast with this area. Like housing counseling can boil down to say when you've got to go stand in line to wait for an hour to get a mat at a Harbor Lights rescue mission if you're in Portland. But apparently they had shelter beds available in San Francisco and all that. I think the big plus or the big advertising point of Homeless Connect in San Francisco and elsewhere is public involvement and expanded public awareness. So I guess the question I'm thinking about is what do you do with that awareness once you develop it? What's the best way to utilize it and really, cultivate it and sustain it? And for one thing, I have a little difficulty what public awareness means. I mean, does that mean spending a couple hours doing intake with homeless folks? Is that supposed to be expand your awareness of what homelessness is about? Like, and Dan, is that going to help appreciate what Dan was going through dealing with that abscessed tooth? I just wonder. To me, there's a real danger of it's lending itself to political posturing and to just a momentary feel-good moment. The danger being that it's going to give the impression that homelessness is being effectively addressed, when, of course, it's the opposite. It's basically an advertisement for the fact that there's this huge need, such that people are so desperate they really leap on something like an afternoon of one-time services.
I think your points are excellent. So we have a caller on the line. Good evening, caller.
Well, hi. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Absolutely wonderful. Thank you very, very much. I was a volunteer at Project Homeless Connect, and I worked in a cafe, and it was a wonderful experience. It was really nice to see people connect. All right. The only thing I can hope is it's just not a one-shot thing. All right. One thing I found as a quote volunteer, there was like about a ton of donuts and coffee downstairs in the rally room for us. But when I got in, as I entered, I didn't notice any donuts and coffee outside for the people that were waiting there in the cold.
That's an excellent point. That seems to echo some of the things that that Dan you were referring to too. Do you want to speak to this a little bit more?
Well, I think these are some things they're going to try and change for the next Homeless Connect. They're not going to have people waiting outside in the rain, for one thing. They were a little surprised. They were a little overwhelmed by how many people showed up. They were expecting maybe 50, maybe 500, and somewhere closer to 1,000 people showed up. There was not enough room for people to wait inside.
Caller, I wondered if we could ask you a question, which is,
sure.
When you think about sort of next steps, and one of the things we're talking about here today is, I think you might have your radio on. So
okay, hang on a minute.
Yeah, step away from that radio.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you think the long term...
Turn the radio down.
All right, thank you there.
All right.
Yeah, that's fine. Now, okay, you know what? We're still getting feedback, so
okay,
let's say goodbye tonight. Thank you very much for calling, and I appreciate your volunteerism.
No.
All right, thank you. So, again, the number is 503-231-8187. So that caller's observation was pretty interesting. I myself was unable to attend the event. I have to say, on hearing about it later, I was rather stunned that there wasn't the thinking of in terms of dealing with the line. Now, do people have any shelter at all, or were they literally standing in the pouring rain? Because that was a cold, rainy day.
Yeah, there was shelter. I think a lot of problems could have been solved if tickets had been given out the way Potluck in the Park, for example, does on Sunday afternoons. They give tickets out at 1 o'clock, and then they start the feed at 3 o'clock so that people know their place in line and they can come back at a set time later on and not have to deal with the cold and the rain and stuff. There was a slight sheltered area. Dealing with the seats, as Dan says, you know, is really a critical part. How you do that, I'm not real sure, you know, to avoid a lot of confusion.
All right. Well, we have another caller on the line. Good evening. You're on KBOO FM.
Well, I used to run a nonprofit which did affordable housing. And part of the reason is there's so much money wasted within the system through the city. And so it's actually very hard to do it, because what you really need to do affordable housing is to be able to subsidize your housing. And I know we lost about $50,000 a year, and I know the other nonprofits have those kind of problems because, and there's all kinds of reasons which I don't want to go into, but, and there's so much waste through the city, through the PDC, and all the people who want to help the nonprofits. And by the way, just the Fed money that comes down is loaned to the nonprofits. It's not handed to them, and so they have to pay it back. And so it's just very hard to do. I won't have anything to do with it anymore because it's too hard. And then is you just have the problems with the bureaucracy. And so I hate to tell you, and I know Eric Stinn very well. I know him on a first name basis, and he's very sincere. But is the problem is money is not well used because of the system. And I hate to say that, but it's flatly true.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your input. I want to echo some of that, and then my guest, Dan, is going to add some too. But just very briefly, I think there's no question that over the past 30 years, the way that the federal government has shifted responsibility to localities to provide affordable housing, and the very complex tax credit system has certainly created some inefficiencies. But I would also argue that regardless of how you look at how money is being administrated through the local level at the system, the volume of the need far exceeds the volume of the resources coming in. So I think you make some good points about how we could better be efficient, but I also think it's important to acknowledge we have 17,000 households on a wait list of at least 3.5 years to get Section 8 vouchers, which they're fully entirely qualified for. And that's simply a question of there's not enough resources put into a system that we know has shown some dividends. So that's, I think, one other way to look at the conundrum of why we don't have the affordable housing needed to provide for people's needs. Dan, did you have some comments?
Yeah. In 1979, the country spent like $16 billion. $16 billion building affordable poverty. Okay, in 1979, this country spent $16 billion building affordable housing units. Shortly after that, it was defunded. And the most that's been spent in a single year since like 1983 has been $3 billion. They ended up tearing down a lot of the affordable housing units because of the lack of money going into that infrastructure. Last year, approximately $120 billion was spent in tax write-offs for mortgage interest. When you incorporate like the subsidies from taxes from mortgages, and most of that goes to people making more than $80,000 a year. When you look at the shift and how the money's being spent, there really isn't. It shouldn't be any surprise that there's homeless people. They didn't even have to start funding the McKinney grant funds that fund the shelters and stuff. They didn't even start doing that until I think what was it, 86 or 87?
That's correct, during the Reagan era.
And that's because they defunded building affordable housing. They forced people out on the street, and then they needed to build the shelters. And now we're moving back away from the shelters, but we're throwing crumbs at the problem instead of really addressing the issue. And I think the root cause of this is some of the propaganda that comes out of the libertarian and neocon think tanks. They are running the policy that this country has been working under. And we need, that's what we really need to combat, that those kind of twisted messages, the trickle-down theory, those kind of things are what are causing poverty, and that is the root cause of poverty in this country.
All right. So, Jay, did you want to reflect on that last caller's comments?
What, about the donuts and the coffee? That's good to me. Pass it over.
Well, you talked about having resources available, different websites and other groups and organizations.
Yeah, I would like to share some websites.
Yeah, yeah.
I have some excellent ones. My interest includes healthcare, obviously, but I'll list these. The Oregon Food Bank has a wonderful website, ofb.org. The Oregon Center for Public Policy in Silverton, of course, that's occpp.org. The D.C. Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, cbpp.org. I hope you're able to write this down, listeners. Oregonians for Health Security is a wonderful operation. Mary Beth Healy had a great op-ed in the Oregonian recently. That's one word spelled out, oregoniansforhealthsecurity.org. The National Alliance to End Homelessness, NAEH.org, the National Low Income Housing Coalition, NLIHC.org. There's some others. There's the Economic Policy Institute, and you'll just have to Google that. I'm not sure what the website is. Elders in Action, their website is Elders Action, one word spelled out, no IN, just eldersaction.org. The League of Women Voters has a wonderful. Now, these they occasionally deal with low-income issues. The last several ones that I've mentioned. The Oregon Health Action Campaign has a great website, ohac.org. The National Association for Community Health Centers, and I mentioned that you know these clinics like the Westside Clinic are the front line of health care for the uninsured and the homeless, and they're. It was really commendable, in my opinion, what Kim Tierney, as the coordinator of that, and that whole group of medical and dental providers were able to get together because the county health department is dealing with really significant cuts, and yet they were able to get this community response again to provide, even if it was just a one-time deal, dental care and, you know, like diabetes screening. That's a huge thing. A lot of these things... When you're out on the streets, you're not aware of them. You're just so worn out and you're, you know, aching. You're distracted. You don't think about, like, the fact that you have progressive diabetes, type 2 stuff. So NACHC.org is that community health clinic.
That is a great, that's a great list of resources. You know, I'm going to put out the number one more time. We have chance for about one more caller on this conversation. Then we're going to wrap up our conversation about Homeless Connect and actually bring back a representative of one of these coalitions that's doing work around the issue of more of the needed resources to help stabilize families, people with disabilities, and seniors. So the number, 503-231-8187. Again, we're looking for callers who want to talk about Project Homeless Connect. Dan, since we're sort of moving towards wrapping up, are there any observations you have as we know that the city and the county are planning a second Homeless Connect? What would you say to those organizers as they begin to pull together their plan for this second event?
I hope they can get as much energy. I mean, it was phenomenal, the support they were able to generate. People like Julie Massa from the Oregon Food Bank did a lot of work to help to organize that. Sarah Culp, Kayleen, I can't remember her last name, with Eric Stent's office. I'm sorry. But they did a huge amount of work to produce what was really a beautiful event. I lost my thought.
That's good. We have a caller on the air. Hello, caller. You are on KBOO FM.
Oh, good evening. Someone was talking about some problems he had as kind of functioning as an independent agency a few minutes back.
Yes, the last caller.
And I hate to find fault, but there are assumptions about homelessness, the issue of homelessness, poverty, joblessness, which are being made, which are really a kind of a roadblock. Here we have many people assuming that poverty and homelessness are a temporary issue, that somehow they will go away. All that's needed is a kind of rush of volunteer enthusiasm. But we're looking at a system here where the sources of income, the resources, the jobs, or even low-paid jobs that people could get, just simply are not there anymore. And here we have people who are trying to treat the issue as if it's a stepping stone for a career. You know, you have all kinds of little groups and individuals who want to start nonprofit organizations which depend on public and governmental grants. And the assumption, you know, there's no real unified effort to tackle the issues and the problems. And a big one-day event to call attention to it is a good thing, but it's only a one-day event.
Well, I think you're right, caller, and I think that echoes the feelings of us here in the studio and Jay at home, that the strength of the event, all the things that happen that were positive of the event, really become significant when the event is a starting point, when it's part of a larger piece to address what I hear you correctly naming as the more systemic causes and underlying dynamics that create an underclass in this country, that create a group of people that are constantly assaulted by economic realities to the point where homelessness becomes the best way they can survive.
If we encourage people to go into more into the kind of social worker sort of mentality, you know, where you have these neutral functionaries who are ministering to the poor, is that really a long-term solution? You know, because the economic basis for assisting the poor just simply are drying up. To what extent they ever did exist anyway. I won't take up a lot of your time here.
Well, thank you very much for your call this evening, and that's going to wrap up our discussion tonight of Project Homeless Connect. Thank you very much, Dan, for being in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
And Jay, thank you very much for your input from home. I hope for a steady recovery from your hip surgery.
I appreciate it. Thank you both.
All right, we're going to take a little musical break. Thank you for all the callers who shared your opinions. And then we're going to come back with Sam Chase with the Affordable Housing Now Coalition.
So we thought we'd do a Woody Guthrie song here. Folks back east, they say, yeah, leaving home every day, right, beating the hot old dusty way out to the California line.
Yeah.
Across the desert sands they roll, trying to get out of that old dust bowl. They think they're going to a sugar bowl, but this is what they find. Police at the port of entry say, you're number 14,000 for today. And if you ain't got the do-re-mi, boy, if you ain't got go back to your beautiful Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Georgia, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. take your vacations by the mountains or the sea. Well, don't sell that old cow for a car. You might want to stay right where you are. Take a little advice from me. Cause I read the warnings every day, and the headlines in the papers always say, beautiful Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Georgia, Tennessee.
Welcome back to Hole in the Bucket. That was Ani DeFranco doing the Woody Guthrie song Do Re Mi, which don't mean nothing if you don't got the Do Re Mi. And that's the subject of our next segment here for Hole in the Bucket, which is talking about resources. And one of the things that came up in our discussion of Project Homelessness Connect is the success of the day. One of the things that they did not include was the resources that would immediately help people get stabilized into having the home that they're looking for. And tonight with me in the studio is Sam Chase, the executive director of the Community Development Network and a key leader with the Affordable Housing Now Coalition. Welcome, Sam.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here with the next national radio star, Michael Anderson.
Well, local for now. In the effort to make full disclosure, I should say that I also work at the Community Development Network, and I'm also very involved in the Affordable Housing Now Coalition. But tonight, what I wanted to do is talk with you, Sam, to find out, first, tell us a little bit more. What is Affordable Housing Now, and what are the goals of the coalition?
Affordable Housing Now is an organization, a coalition of more than 40 organizations that got together essentially 3 years ago and said, you know, we all are working on housing issues, or we're working on issues that are related to housing, and we don't have a common plan together. And what we really recognize is that we can't go out and do it all alone. We need to get together and really focus on what's really going to solve the housing issue in Portland, and that is the final piece of the puzzle, which is getting resources and getting significant resources to build housing.
And when you say resources for housing, one of the things we've seen is in the media locally here, affordable housing can mean a lot of different things. When Affordable Housing Now talks about it, who are we talking about in terms of getting people housing?
We're talking about, first and foremost, the folks who are out there the every day in Portland and in our region and in Oregon making a decision between paying for their housing and paying for food or medicine. That's a real choice that people are making in our community. And those are the folks, first and foremost. Those are seniors. Those are families with children. Those are disabled folks. Those are people of color. Those are the folks that we're trying to find these solutions for.
And just so our listeners out here, do we have some estimates, some numbers that let us know about what this need is?
Well, there are many numbers and that prove over and over again that this is a crisis and that this is a situation that, you know, we are far too wealthy a state and a country and a city to let this problem continue. There are 11,000 children homeless in our state every year. There are on a given night, there are numerous counts that are conservative accounts, essentially. And Multnomah County had a one-night shelter count. 2,752 people were homeless in Multnomah County on a given night.
Just in the shelters?
Just in the shelters. There were Clackamas County also has very high counts, I think over 2,000 people homeless on a given night in Clackamas County, well over 2,000 people homeless on a given night in Clackamas County as well.
And nearly 1,000 of those children. So there's no question that Affordable Housing Now is focusing on a growing and ever-present need. Today, Affordable Housing Now kicked off its campaign with City Council. Tell us a little bit about what happened this morning.
This morning we had a lot of the members of our coalition come down to City Hall, individuals from the coalition and people representing organizations coming down and saying, City Council, you know, there is this crisis out there. We know we need to work at the metro level. We know we need to work at the state level. But we have to work right here at home to solve this problem. We have the tools to do it. And we hope that you will lead our community. You've been leaders in our community on housing. You need to keep doing that to solve this housing issue. We presented some packages that we think will help solve that.
Specifically, tell a little bit about what Affordable Housing Now asked of City Council.
So we presented two proposals. One was that we have a housing investment fund that would meet our $30 million goal. We have been working towards this goal for 3 years. The goal is $30 million. The idea is that $30 million would help address immediate needs in the short term and be a bridge for us to be able to go and find a longer-term solution at the state or the regional level. So we're working very actively at the metro level, at the state level. We could go into that if we have time later on. But we're having real successes there. But we can't drop the ball and while we work toward that progress. We have to have we have to take care of the system, at least the basics, you know, while we're here. So so the Housing Investment Fund would provide $30 million. That would cover us for 3 to 5 years. We've secured with the City Council $13 million, and we have 17 left to go to meet that $30 million goal.
Now, the other major initiative that you were asking of City Council had to do with urban renewal funds in the city. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
So I should say a little bit about urban renewal just to give it some context. And what's happening in our urban renewal areas is that, you know, 20 years ago, many of us were saying, hey, we need urban renewal to help lift up blighted communities. There are neighborhoods out there, you know, 20 years ago where there was, you know, unsafe housing and abandoned housing and brownfields. And so we wanted to see that urban renewal happen. Well, it happened. The property values have shot up. We have seen such rapid increases in prices without, at the same time, a plan to make sure that the folks who were there trying to help could stay in those neighborhoods. So all of a sudden, we have a dynamic where we're creating and gentrifying these neighborhoods, and it's having an effect on the city as a whole. And we're seeing families moving out of the central city area. They're moving out to the inner ring suburbs. They're moving out to the outskirts of Portland. And mostly low-income families, incredibly destabilizing to the schools. The schools are recognizing this and very concerned about this. So what we have gone to City Council to do is say, hey, we have to have a plan to deal with low-income housing. Housing is the problem that we're not getting to in these urban renewal areas, and we have to focus on housing as the solution, and we have to have a plan to fund that housing. We came up with a recommendation that it follows what California was able to do, which is to say anytime you spend urban renewal money, a percentage of that money has to go to affordable housing. So we recommend that 30% go to affordable housing and that it go to a range of income levels and that be as much of a priority as those other important priorities.
And since this was the kickoff of the campaign, this is something that we're going to see for the next couple months. Do you want to talk a little bit about what the campaign's going to look like and maybe how people can get involved?
So one of the things we talked about is that the resources are the last piece of the puzzle to making the housing system work. We are going to have delegations go in every week for 15 weeks and bring one piece of a puzzle to the council members and help put that puzzle together.
A literal puzzle.
An actual puzzle. And at the same time, delegations are going to go in and bring stories and photos of the people who have been able to succeed in school and life and much more because they've had housing. And we're going to tell those stories and we're going to bring in pieces of the puzzle to them.
That sounds like it's going to be a fun campaign.
It is going to be fun. We're going to get all kinds of groups in there, and it's kind of a creative, fun way to interact with council, too.
What about for individuals out there? I'm getting the signal that we got to wrap up and get ready to go. But if you could tell quickly for our listeners out there, if they wanted to get involved with Affordable Housing Now, how would they do that?
Well, our wonderful host, Michael Anderson, is an excellent contact, and you can reach him or anybody else at CDN at 335-9884. That's a phone number. And then you can also look at the website for the host organization for a lot of the work of Affordable Housing Now, www.cdnportland.org.
That's great. So I really appreciate you coming into the show tonight and sharing this about Affordable Housing Now. You are running for state senate, and I wish you great luck in that race. What district are you running for?
Charlie Ringo's old district. We need some housing activists down in Salem. There are none down there, and it's time to bring some Democratic activist values back to the legislature.
Well, I like to hear that. And for our listeners out there, we have a lot of progressive friends in the KBOO community. It's time that all of us get more engaged in the system. We are not going to change this beast unless we get more engaged in the seat of power. So thank you very much, Sam, for being here. Thank you very much for our callers earlier. This is Michael Anderson signing off for Hole in the Bucket. You are listening to 90.7 KBOO FM, your community radio station. We're going to leave you with Neil Young, Rockin' in the Free World.
For the KBOO community calendar, followed by non-stop hip-hop.
Keep on rocking in the free world.
This is the community calendar for Wednesday, February 8th. You're invited to attend a benefit screening of select short films from the best of the